Hello, and welcome to Accent of Women, a show by and about women from diverse cultures and languages right across the world. I'm Nida. On today's show, we'll be listening to the second part of the recording of the Pan-African Women's Day seminar convened by the All African People's Revolutionary Party, and which was held in March of this year. The theme for the seminar is a Pan-Africanist feminist tribute, honoring African women resisting imperialism, settler colonialism, neocolonialism, national and women's oppression, and Zionism. Have a listen.
Just for some of our speakers who have just joined us, we have begun with our first two questions. The first one, which is, why should all women, particularly African women and women of African descent, engage in the fight against imperialism, settler colonialism, neocolonialism, national and women's oppression, as well as Zionism? And then we asked the more direct question, which is about how you and or your organization understands the issue of feminism in particular, perhaps if you engage with it in a different kind of way. So our sister Camille Landry has offered womanism as an alternative to feminism. Hopefully I'm not misrepresenting this, but Flavia Marquez from Venezuela has offered that there has been some antagonisms with the feminism, with the sort of broader feminist movement in the Venezuelan context amongst Afro-Venezuelans. And even as she said that, she wasn't making a comment about the Afro-Venezuelan movement not taking up issues of women's concern, but just that the broader feminist movement has tended to only focus on gender as opposed to other forms of exploitation and oppression. And my understanding of Nuhad's understanding of feminism as it relates to the Palestinian movement is that there is a somewhat of a process of reclamation of the term feminist, in that a reclamation and or sort of a corrective, right? And so while I think we are, all of us who have spoken are in agreement that there has been a projection of feminism in the U.S., in Venezuela, even amongst Palestinians, that has tended to be white, has tended to be imperial, has tended to be Western in these other forms, and that the Palestinian movement is offering that if one is to actually claim feminism, then they have to also claim these other anti-Zionist, anti-colonial, anti-imperialist positions. And so there's a sort of corrective there being offered in terms of feminism. So I would love to hear from some of our other speakers about your thought on your thoughts on those issues.
Sure. Is it still morning? Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ezli Danton, and I'm a human rights lawyer. For a long time, I run the Haitian Lawyers Leadership Network, the Free IHC Movement, and many different programs for humanitarian aid in IHC. Obviously, for us, we are colonized in IHC right now by the core group of nations who have come since 2004 to essentially depopulate the space. The United States has the largest embassy in the Western Hemisphere in IHC. That is not the conversation that we hear. So our work is not based on gender, even though I am a woman. My work is anti-colonialist. I find those who talk to me about feminism, especially the NGOs in IHC, or especially the imperialists, are more concerned about sexual orientation when they want to talk about feminism. And that's not of interest to us. Our interest is liberation of our people and Black empowerment. To that end, I prefer womanist, even though I don't use any term really. But I can tell you how my work is expressed. So my name is Ezli Danton. That is the warrior mother. So we work with women who are multifaceted, mothers, wives, community activists, agriculturists, farmers, all different disciplines of women. And we have programs to empower those women and their children and their family. There is a concept in IT, an economic concept. It's called Madan Sara. Just like in Africa, our reality is different from that of the invented white woman. I mean, she has to do her own stuff because she's been invented by patriarchy to become the meek wife. We've never really had that choice as Black women. Not in IT for 220 years. Women were expected to work as hard as any African man in the sugar fields, in the coffee plantations. And to this day, unless we work, we don't eat. That is our reality as Haitian women. It is our reality, whether we're in IT or whether we come to the United States in the diaspora to clean people's toilets and do whatever it is that's necessary at Springfield so that Mr. Trump could call us eaters of pet. I felt very offended for my mother because she was a cook and she would cook for the entire community on certain days. And so that idea that we are cooking pets, these are the things that right now our community is under siege. The Biden program gave Haitien, we didn't ask for it, but because the United States uses Haiti as a naval base to counter Nicaragua, Venezuela, and Cuba, they put Haiti in their for Biden program, which is about creating destabilization and brain drain. A lot of our women right now, and men and families, are in chaos because they came for a 2-year program or they got TPS after. So those are the things I work on as a lawyer, the interests of the community, what is going on. And we do something called the non-colonial narrative on IT. So I don't define what I'm doing in terms of my gender, but my gender is the root of what Esli Danton is, the warrior mother. She was the entity, the archetype, the, you could call it the I can't say that word, mitochondrial woman, the Hathor, the Dantor, that quicken the Haitian Revolution folks after 300 years of slavery. And so we're looking to do that again. We're looking to elevate the mother that we know in all of these different African societies, of which runs in my DNA as Haitien, because all of the different ethnicities that came from the Congo, Angola, and the West are what Haitien means. And so I concentrate on our indigenous culture that has been created and how that indigenous culture is rooted in community and in family. When the captured Republic of Haiti, because the white domination system, they take over your government, they create your technocrats, but out in the hinterland, in the mountains, that's where our people created something called La Coup. So after 300 years, the women who had been forced to create property for the slavers, sometimes they were forced to do it from puberty to menopause. They did not last. But those women, when they became free in combat, they created something called La Coup because they went around Haiti trying to find their children. So it's a space in Haiti where family lives together. It has nothing to do with the captured republic. So I don't deal with the concepts of Westerners at all. We try to enter in what the reason I'm here is because there was a woman that lived in a Lakou in Haiti that worked the farm when she wasn't paying the debt of France that forced us to do reparations. She was taking care of her family. And that woman is why I'm here, not the state, because as you all know, the state is a distortion, an insult to our intelligence. It works for a particular level of society. It has nothing to do with the masses in Haiti. So we created LACOU, something called COMBIT, which is collective work. A good example of that is that women got together after the United States and its agents, the FBI, the CIA, the DEA, and their clientele, Colombian military folks came and killed our president. They needed to create food for themselves because, as you all know, I'm sure it happens in every country because colonialism controls everything. Your wealth, your economy, your trade routes. And in Haiti, we have overseers that are Lebanese and Syrian. Those buffer races were deployed into the Caribbean in Haiti and Africa. They call themselves non-blacks. That's their thing, right? So we teach our people what they're not being taught in different spaces. We help our people with that understanding geopolitics and why we would have a Biden program and then why Trump would come in. Well, Biden got rid of it before he left. So, like for instance, right now we have 500,000 Haitians with temporary protected status in Haiti since the earthquake, right? My community is constantly faced with crisis after crisis because the empire is trying to take us totally over and keep us unstable, right? So, when, for instance, to give you an example of what I do, when, for instance, they just stop TPS, obviously, there are other ways if you're already in the United States, so that we work with different folks to let them know you here's what you can do. There's no point in feeding the fear that they're trying to get from you. And also, we give them empowerment by saying, hey, listen, TPS was given to Haiti for the first time in history after the earthquake. And if you're deported, like they say, like Trump says he's going to do, he's going to deport 500,000 TPS holders from Haiti. I want you to look at it this way, right? I'm pretty sure that's not going to happen because most of the workers, a lot of the workers in America are foreigners, but they're not getting the immigrants are not getting that information. Specifically, they're not getting it from the immigration folks who just want to make money from them a lot of times. So we say, hey, listen, right? From 2010 to 2025, right now, you have invested in the American system for Medicare and Social Security $11.6 billion. Imagine leadership of Haiti if you fix the infrastructure in Haiti so that those people did not leave and we countered the colonial control. So that money that we just invested in Haiti to be treated the way we're being treated in America is invested in your own country. So those are the things we try to do is since we are the world's greatest disaster story and our people are mentally exhausted and traumatized by the constantness of it, we try to bring hope. We try to bring answers. We try to bring empowerment. I don't know that means anything. But lastly, I want to say, besides dealing with the work that I just explained to you that we do in the community that's rooted in community and family, there's a very strong, obviously, spiritual part of Esli Danto, the warrior mother, the irreducible essence of all that was that mitochondrial woman, all that was in terms of the Hathor, Isis, however they call that woman that the Judeo-Christian folks have taken out of society and the world. So we bring that back, right? And that has no, it just depends on whatever you, it has no, nothing that requires, it depends on what you were born with. If you were born to be a lawyer or whatever it is that is your boon, we encourage you to go after whatever that is, irregardless of your sex. So I don't know if you have a question for me, but that's kind of what I can say.
No, thank you. That's really important. I think it's I mean, I think it is on par with things that we that with conversations that we have been having, I think, inside of our movement. So I heard you say obviously that one, obviously the woman in a general sense is venerated in a particular kind of way through the spirit of Esili Danto. But that I think similar to kind of some of the issues that perhaps Fravia was raising in Venezuela, that as people deal with the issue of feminism and in particular in places where NGOs are the driving forces behind people's relationship to and understanding of feminism, other issues are being the sort of centrality of gender is one that is perhaps distracting from the very equal footing that issues of nation and race and these other ways of being oppressed are being taken up. And so I understand, at least from what I heard you say, Esili Danto, that in particular, this question about women, while women occupy a particular place in the struggle, it is not one that is central because the central questions are about the nature of our oppression as colonized, as formerly enslaved, as or continuously enslaved peoples whose nations and or communities are being ravaged. There was something I was going to add to that. I lost my train of thought. But I do want to add that a few folks have said some things in the comments. So our sister Naya Tandem from Cameroon, I believe, said, we are the people to solve our problems, and it's necessary to come and reason together to look for solutions to for our suffering as African women. I think Namia Smith said, sis, it is the Black American woman's reality as well. And I know that was in relationship to the comment that Esili Danto made about African women, Black women, not being treated distinctively on the basis of their womanness by the institutions of enslavement or colonization or neo-colonialism. If we do not work, we do not eat. But I also think that some of the issues or tensions too arise from this sort of secondary question, which is also sort of what contrad or a tertiary question, what contradictions, sorry, exist between rhetoric and action in African women's liberation. And so I think while we can acknowledge that as African women, as Black women, we don't get treated. Certainly, we are not constructed the way white women are constructed, the way white bourgeois women are constructed. But then, are there existing contradictions that do create some barriers to our involvement, to our contributions to struggle as women, or on the basis of our identity as women? So I see Camille has her hand raised, and I would like to invite her to speak.
Specific to what Sister Danto said about if you don't work, you don't eat, and that women were treated in the same way that men are. There's another factor here that we tend to overlook, even though it's a big factor. And that is that much of the oppression, much of the warfare, much of the struggle has been carried out on our bodies. All right. From the very first moment that slavery was conceived of and put into place, that chattel slavery was conceived of, women's bodies were used, were weaponized against, through rape. In the United States, and I don't know how these figures go for the rest of the diaspora, but in the United States, the average person, African person, has 26% European DNA. Let me say that again. More than one quarter of your genes come from Europeans. And for some of us, it's a much higher number. In parts of Puerto Rico, 100% of the people in parts of that island, just as an example, have no indigenous male ancestry. That 100% of the people are descended either from Castilian or, Spanish or African brought over here people. So the war is fought on our bodies. And many times, rape is weaponized even by our own people against women. And that cannot be overlooked because that is another kind of terrorism. That is another kind of oppression. But what do we do in response to that? We bring that family in, we hold that family close, we nurture, we love, we support, we do all of the things that women do. And then we take the lead in the struggle for liberation. And we see ourselves in that position now where women's voices have been the loudest, the strongest, the most forceful, the most woke, if you will. If you imagine the word woke, there's probably a woman's face next to that word. To the point that we have been asked to put ourselves out there in a way that is not healthy for us. We have asked to be at the forefront, at the vanguard of a struggle. We told these people what was going to happen if they did what they did. We told these people what the result was going to be. We warned these people about incipient fascism. We warned these people about oppression. And did they listen? No. And so here we are again, with people all up in arms saying, what are we going to do, about this struggle? We're looking at fascism in the United States. We're looking at fascism in so many other countries. I envy Fravi and my sisters in Venezuela who don't have that particular struggle. The sisters in Cuba, the sisters elsewhere, whose revolution has freed them from that particular form of oppression. But our answer, the answer to that, to what are we going to do in these times of peril, is that we are going to continue to do the things that we have done for hundreds and hundreds of years. We are going to draw our people in. We are going to love and nurture our people. We are going to preserve, protect, defend our communities. We are going to stand on a platform of human rights. We are going to do everything we can to further our human rights within this context. We go concentrate on us. We go take care of us. And what comes out of it is what will. But our response is and always has been to oppression of all sorts and kinds is to draw ourselves in together and to stand shoulder to shoulder with our sisters and brothers and others in our own communities.
Absolutely. I think it's and I think that that's part of the question about the contradictions. So while it is that we know, in the same way that we as Pan-Africanists say that Africa is primary, we know the struggle for our liberation against colonialism, against enslavement, against neocolonialism, against capitalism are primary in these struggles. But we also know that there are particular ways that women and women's contribution, whether it be by the broader colonial white supremacist structures and or by some of the internal community dynamics that we experience, have put women in precarious types of positions. And so I think that that's also a conversation that we have to have as well.
I want to add while you're saying that, because what the sister just said triggered something that I think it's important to understand too. Not only is colonialism, slavery, and imperialism fought on the Black woman's body in terms of rape, but also, for instance, in Haiti, medical experiments are still ongoing on Black women. So,
Yes.
for instance, we were the women that the American pharmaceuticals tested Depo-Provera on and the pill on. And today they're trying to do it with whatever vaccines they decide to they want to conjure up. So I can tell you that in my career, I've had women who had that Depo-Provera stuff on. They were supposed to take them out in 5 years and they never came back. Stuff like that. And I don't need to explain to this audience about medical apartheid. I don't need to explain how our women, our sisters, when they go to the doctor and they tell them something, they are not listened to. So that's when they would call Ezeli Danto. That's what they would call an advocate. But these things are very important to us. They may not be, like I said, feminism to me is all about white women's voting rights. Voting rights is not going to give me liberation, nor their sexuality do I care about. But where we come from, as descendants of the warriors that did the Haitian Revolution, as descendants and folks in the diaspora that are Pan-Africanists, right, that elevate Nkrumah and Patrice Lumumba and that look at Traoré right now as our light. As we look at those things, our interest is that we want our women to be whole, going back to our own culture, going back to our own spirituality, all of that is wholeness, and it's something that we try to stand for.
And that's all we've got time for today. We just heard the second part of the recording of the Pan-African Women's Day seminar convened by the All African People's Revolutionary Party and which was held in March of this year. The theme was a Pan-Africanist feminist tribute, honoring African women resisting imperialism, settler colonialism, neocolonialism, national and women's oppression, and Zionism. The next part of the discussion will be aired on the show in the coming weeks. Stay tuned. The first part of the discussion was aired on the 4th of August and can be found on our website. Accent of Women is produced in the Melbourne studios of Community Radio 3CR with the financial assistance of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. The show is distributed nationally via the Community Radio Network, with special thanks to the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia. Music for Accent of Women was written and produced by George Kanjuray. Thank you for tuning into the program. I'm Nita, and we look forward to your company again next week.